Everyone says burnout comes from working too much. But humans have always worked hard, sometimes much harder than we do today. So what's actually going on?
Welcome to Claude Talks. I'm Emma.
And I'm Ryan. And today we're going to argue about burnout.
We are. And I'll admit up front, I came into this episode with a pretty conventional view. Burnout equals overwork. The solution is rest, boundaries, work less. Classic.
And I'm going to spend the next 20 minutes trying to convince you that that's not just incomplete, it's actually counterproductive. Because if we misdiagnose the problem, we keep prescribing the wrong cure.
Okay, make your case. But let me push back because I think most people listening have genuinely felt what they call burnout, and it does feel like exhaustion from too much work.
Right. And I'm not going to tell you that exhaustion isn't real. It is. But here's the thing, exhaustion and burnout aren't the same thing. And the history of work is kind of devastating for the burnout equals overwork story.
How so?
So think about a medieval serf during harvest season. Up at dawn, working until sunset, physically grueling labor. Day after day. By any modern standard, brutal overwork.
Sounds like burnout waiting to happen.
Except, here's the twist, the medieval calendar had between 80 and 115 feast days and rest days per year. Saints' days, Sundays, local festivals. The church mandated them. That's more days off than most modern workers get in paid annual leave.
Wait, seriously? Medieval peasants had more holidays than I do?
Structurally, arguably yes. The work was brutal when it happened. But it had a rhythm. Natural off switches, sunset ended the day, winter slowed everything down, the seasons dictated the pace. And then think about 19th century factory workers. 12 to 16 hour days, 6 days a week. Now that is genuine overwork by any measure.
That sounds horrendous.
It was. But here's the critical question, burnout as a clinical concept didn't exist until 1974. The word was coined by a psychologist named Herbert Freudenberger, and he used it to describe volunteers at a drug rehabilitation clinic in New York who were emotionally depleted and cynical. Not factory workers. Not medieval peasants. Volunteers at a clinic.
So the concept is modern.
Remarkably modern. And the rates have only gone up since then. We now work fewer average hours than at almost any point in recorded history, at least in the developed world. The average work week has been falling for a century. And yet burnout is supposedly at epidemic levels.
Okay, I'll grant you that's a strange paradox. If burnout is just overwork, why is it worse when we work less?
Exactly. And this is where the research gets really interesting. Because a psychologist named Christina Maslach actually dug into this properly. She developed the Maslach Burnout Inventory in 1981, it's still the gold standard diagnostic tool. And what she found was that hours worked alone is a surprisingly poor predictor of burnout.
That's counterintuitive. What does predict it?
She identified three dimensions of burnout. First, exhaustion, yes, that's there. Second, cynicism and depersonalization, this sense of emotional detachment, of not caring anymore, of going through the motions. And third, a reduced sense of efficacy, feeling like what you're doing doesn't matter, like you're ineffective.
And exhaustion is just one of three.
Right. And then she and her colleague Michael Leiter went further and identified six organizational mismatches that actually drive burnout. This is the framework I find most compelling.
Walk me through them.
The first is workload. Yes, that includes hours, but it's specifically about unmanageable demands without the resources or control to meet them. It's not just you work a lot. It's you work a lot and you have no power over how or when or with what.
So the quantity isn't the whole issue.
The second mismatch is lack of control or autonomy. Being micromanaged. Being surveilled. Not being able to make decisions about your own work. This one is massive.
I feel this one. There's something deeply demoralizing about being told exactly how to do something you know how to do.
The third is lack of recognition. Work that goes unnoticed, unrewarded, unacknowledged. You put in the effort and it disappears into a void. Fourth is poor community, toxic colleagues, isolation, workplace bullying. The social environment at work.
And these are all separate from how many hours you work.
Completely separate. Fifth is unfairness, arbitrary decisions, favoritism, inconsistency in how people are treated. And sixth, and this is the one I find most underappreciated, values mismatch. Being asked to do things that conflict with your ethics or your sense of purpose.
Give me an example.
A nurse who went into nursing to care for people being forced by hospital management to discharge patients too early for cost reasons. A journalist who believes in truth being pressured to write misleading headlines. A designer who cares about accessibility being told to ignore it because it slows down shipping. The work itself creates internal conflict.
That does feel different from just being tired.
And Maslach is explicit about this, the number one driver of burnout isn't overwork. It's meaninglessness combined with helplessness. You're doing something pointless and you can't change it.
Which brings us to someone you mentioned before we recorded, David Graeber.
Yes. Graeber was an anthropologist at the London School of Economics who published a book in 2018 called Bullshit Jobs. And his central claim is provocative: the huge portion of modern jobs are understood by the people doing them to be essentially pointless. And he's not talking about low-wage jobs. He's talking about middle management, compliance roles, certain types of consultancy, a lot of corporate administrative work.
That's a harsh framing.
It is. But the research behind it is real. He surveyed people asking whether their job made a meaningful contribution to the world, and a striking number said no. And this matters for burnout because, think about what medieval craftsmen had. A cobbler made shoes. You saw the shoes. Someone wore them. A farmer grew food. A builder built a house. The connection between effort and output was direct and visible.
And modern knowledge workers?
Often can't see that connection at all. You write a report that feeds into a deck that gets presented at a meeting that leads to another meeting. You send emails about emails. You attend status meetings about the status of status meetings. The abstraction layer between the work and anything real in the world is enormous.
I feel personally attacked.
Graeber calls it the spiritual violence of meaningless work. And his argument is that burnout might be the psychological consequence of this disconnect, not overwork per se, but the deep unease of devoting your life to something you suspect doesn't matter.
Okay, but I want to add something to this, because I think there's a genuine new problem you haven't mentioned yet. Even if it's not about hours, there's something about modern work that feels different. The always-on thing.
Yes. And I think this is actually the most important genuinely new element. Pre-digital, when you left the office, work could not reach you. Physically could not. There was no mechanism.
You went home and you were home.
Now the office is in your pocket. Slack at 10 p.m. Email on Sunday. That just checking in a message at midnight. And this isn't just more hours in the traditional sense, it's the elimination of genuine psychological rest.
There's a researcher, Gloria Mark at UC Irvine, who found it takes about 20 minutes to regain deep focus after an interruption.
Right. So every notification, every Slack ping, every glance at the work email on a Saturday, it's not just the time it takes to respond. It's the 20 minutes of focus you lose afterward. And the cognitive load never fully discharges. Even when you're technically off, there's a background hum of work anxiety. Did I reply to that? What's happening with that project? Should I check?
So the attention economy and the notification machine are doing something qualitatively different from just adding hours.
They're eliminating the psychological boundary that allowed humans throughout history to actually rest. The surf couldn't be reached at midnight. The Victorian clerk went home and the office was inaccessible. That boundary, that clean separation, is what allowed recovery. We've abolished it without realizing what we lost.
So we have this picture emerging. Burnout is driven by meaninglessness, lack of autonomy, unfairness, poor community, plus this new always-on contamination of rest. And hours worked alone is at best one factor among many.
And probably not the most important one. Which brings me to what I think is the most frustrating aspect of the whole burnout conversation, the solutions being offered.
The wellness programs.
Meditation apps. Mental health days. Yoga classes. Resilience training. Mindfulness workshops. All of which are offered to the employee. All of which treat burnout as an individual psychological problem that the individual must solve.
And you think that's wrong?
Christina Maslach, the person who literally invented the diagnostic framework for burnout, is explicit about this. She says, and I'm paraphrasing, we keep asking the canary to be more resilient. The problem is the coal mine. The canary doesn't need better coping strategies. It needs to get out of the toxic mine.
So the wellness industry is, what, putting a band-aid on a structural wound?
Worse than that. It's making the employee responsible for a management failure. If you burn out, it's because you didn't meditate enough. You didn't set good enough boundaries. You didn't practice self-care. It completely lets the organization off the hook.
And the research backs this up?
Quite clearly. Individual interventions, things directed at the person, have small and often temporary effects on burnout. Organizational changes, restructuring autonomy, addressing workload fairly, creating genuine recognition systems, building psychological safety, have large effects. But those require managers to change. They require companies to change. They require investment and accountability. So instead we get a CalmApp subscription.
That is pretty cynical.
It's accurate. It's a political and economic problem being reframed as a personal psychological problem. Which is a very convenient reframing if you're the organization doing the burning out.
Let me steelman the conventional view for a moment, though. Because some people are genuinely working unsustainable hours. Some industries, medicine, law, finance, do demand 60-80-hour weeks. That's real.
Absolutely real. And I want to be clear, overwork can cause burnout, especially when it's combined with the other factors. And some jobs are genuinely too demanding, full stop. But here's the thing, the simplistic work-less prescription still misses the point, even in those cases.
Why?
Think about startup founders. Elon Musk talks about working 80-hour weeks. Plenty of founders work comparable hours. And many of them don't burn out. Why? Because they have control, meaning, and can see the output of their work. That's completely different from 80 hours of bureaucratic hell where you have no autonomy and can't see the point.
So it's not the hours.
It's the conditions under which you work those hours. The autonomy thesis, and this is backed up by self-determination theory from Desi and Ryan, which is one of the most robust frameworks in motivational psychology, says that humans have three basic psychological needs: autonomy, competence, and relatedness. Connection to others. When those are met, people thrive even in demanding conditions. When they're violated, people deteriorate even in easy ones.
So you could burn out in a 35-hour job.
If that job micromanages you, gives you meaningless tasks, offers zero recognition, isolates you from colleagues, treats you unfairly, and asks you to do things that compromise your values, yes, absolutely. And that's the case for huge numbers of people right now.
There's something else I've noticed in the research. The people most likely to burn out often aren't the most disengaged. They're the most committed.
This is crucial. Burnout is, in a weird way, a disease of people who cared. They started engaged, motivated, giving everything. And then the mismatches ground them down. The cynicism and depersonalization that Maslach describes, that emotional detachment, isn't laziness. It's a protective response. It's the psyche trying to shield itself from repeated pain.
Which is why it's so hard to recover from.
And why rest alone doesn't fix it. People take a holiday. They come back. 2 weeks later they're burned out again. Because nothing changed. The coal mine is still toxic. They just had a brief visit to fresh air before going back in.
So what does actually help? If not meditation apps and mental health days?
The research is pretty consistent on this. Autonomy over how and when you work, not just how many hours, but genuine control over your own working practice. visible output and feedback loops, being able to see that your work matters, that it connects to something real. Community and psychological safety, being able to speak up, make mistakes, be a human being at work.
And alignment between personal and organizational values.
Huge. If you fundamentally believe in what the organization is trying to do, you can endure enormous amounts of difficulty. If you think it's pointless or harmful, even comfortable conditions become draining. And then the ability to genuinely disconnect, which is different from being told you can disconnect. Real structural boundaries. Companies that don't email after 6. Cultures where checking in on holiday is genuinely frowned upon, not just nominally discouraged.
And manager quality.
This is probably the single strongest organizational predictor. Your immediate manager shapes almost everything about your daily working conditions. Bad managers create the mismatches, they micromanage, so you lose autonomy, they don't recognize good work, they create unfair environments, they model always-on behavior. A good manager can partially offset a bad organization. A bad manager can destroy an otherwise reasonable one.
So if you're listening to this and you feel burned out, or you're worried about burning out, what's the practical takeaway?
First, stop blaming yourself. The wellness industry wants you to think this is your fault. It usually isn't. Ask which of Maslacher's 6 mismatches is actually present in your situation. Is it workload? Control? Recognition? Community? Fairness? Values?
Because the diagnosis changes the prescription.
Exactly. If it's values mismatch, if you fundamentally believe your work is pointless or harmful, no amount of autonomy or recognition will fully fix it. You might need to change what you do. If it's lack of recognition, that's a conversation with your manager or a different team. If it's poor community, that's a culture problem that might or might not be solvable.
And if you're a manager listening,
the most important thing you can do is give people control over their own work. Not just over outcomes, but over how they get there. Create genuine feedback loops so people can see their impact. Be fair and consistent in how you treat people. And model actual disconnection. If you send emails at 10 p.m., your team cannot psychologically disconnect, no matter what your stated policy is.
I came into this episode thinking burnout was basically an overwork problem with a rest more solution. I'm leaving it thinking it's a much more structural issue about meaning, autonomy, fairness, and the quality of the environment people are working in.
And that's not a pessimistic conclusion. Because if it's structural, it's changeable. Organizations can restructure autonomy. Managers can change their behavior. Individuals can diagnose their actual problem and address the right thing. It's harder than downloading a meditation app, but it actually works.
What's your one-line summary?
Burnout isn't about working too hard. It's about working without meaning, without control, and without the ability to genuinely rest. Fix those, and people can sustain remarkable amounts of work. Leave those broken, and no amount of yoga will save you.
That's Claude Talks. I'm Emma.
I'm Ryan. If this episode made you think differently about something, share it with someone who needs to hear it.
And if your workplace is still offering you a Calm App subscription as a burnout solution, maybe send it to your manager.
See you next time.